Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, we could start in any number of places with this show in terms of developments. Certainly, Forbidden Door taking shape, and a lot of things happen on this show to put things into focus, either officially adding matches or adding some steam behind them. But the Moxley-Tanahashi stare-down is where I'll start, because that is the main event, presumably. Forbidden Door. What'd you think of the face-to-face, the stare-down at the beginning, the stare-down at the end, and then a lot going on in the middle with Jericho and, we don't have time to list everybody else involved, Tyler, or we'd be out of time.
Yeah, definitely a tale of two segments. I enjoyed the Moxley promo directed at Tanahashi. Obviously, Tanahashi, I think his only words were shut up to Jericho, which is, dangerously making him the babyface out of everyone in that ring as he does it. But yeah, I mean, I think Moxley, he bottled some of those, when he's champion, and then in recent weeks here of that after the first match backstage promo where he just is intense and focused and feels like a champion and feels like a guy who, is focused and is at the top of his game. And he said as much tonight. So I think it was a good mission statement for him and his character, and made this, main event feel important, even though, a lot of these matches feel like you didn't kind of know where they're going. It feels important to Moxley to win this and to do it against Tanahashi, which, within AEW, we don't really get reasons most of the time on why a performer or both performers are interested in fighting each other. And I think Moxley did a good job to sell the match itself for the title and his personal, reasons for wanting Tanahashi and everything he's done to get to that point. So it feels much more important of a match than it did, an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, it's a tough sell when you're selling a pay-per-view to an American audience, and you've got the baked in base audience who are like, AEW, New Japan, pay-per-view, I'm in. They got them. They had them from the second Forb was said in Forbidden Door by Tony Khan. They were already, locked in on the date and buying it. They didn't even need to know a match or a wrestler on the show. Expanding that is a challenge. And, it's tough with Tanahashi not doing a lot of mic work, but and then having the curveball of Moxley and CM Punk that put him, in a way behind the eight ball, to use a cliche, although, like you said, Moxley went out there and just said, this is the guy I've wanted. I've been, he's been on my list. I've been traveling the world. I've been checking a lot of boxes. This is one I want, and I'm going to get it. And also just Moxley was in alpha mode. He wasn't in crazy, sort of Terry Funk, not a title contender, but just wild and crazy. This was back to, I want to be the best in this business. And others say that, I live it. And I thought this was singles world champion Moxley persona more than, and nothing wrong with what else he's been doing, but this fit better for imagining him in a main event world title match than the Moxley that we frankly have been seeing since even before he left for treatment and now even since he was back. And I love both. This just was a better version for what he's doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely, two modes. It's like, it's him, Stanley Cup game one is happening right now. So it's kind of like playoff version of Moxley versus regular season Moxley. It's kind of how I feel like we're getting with him right now. So yeah, agree.
Yep. Good point. All right. What did you consider the number two happening on the show, Tyler?
Yeah. Is it
just recency bias with main event or, or is there something else before that we should bring up first?
Yeah, I mean, in my final thoughts of my report tonight, I had the Dax Harwood and Will Ospreay being the top line positive from the show.
Yeah.
And then I had the Young Bucks, you know, in that match, and obviously with Christian Cage being the most newsworthy segment of the show. So, you know, I would go Ospreay and Harwood. I think, as happens on these shows and as is life, I think when things are really, like, pretty much perfect, bell to bell, you don't talk about it as much, so I want to make sure
right.
that's time. But I thought that was just another reason for Dax Harwood to be an underrated, like, top guy on the roster. But, yeah, I thought that was really a credible match, bell to bell.
Yeah, Dax is just, you know, he's such a big wrestling fan, and this is so – like, to have this opportunity, because he wants these types of opportunities because he knows how good he is. And I know from talking to people in AEW how much pride he takes in the matches that he has and how hard he can be on himself, but how proud he can be after a good match. I mean, it's just he is on the top tier of that type of wrestler. And those wrestlers, you know, are special. And give him and Will to give him 15 minutes on national live television against Will Ospreay is a real compliment to how they feel about Dax's work and what he could do to help show the national audience what Will Ospreay is capable of. And, you know, the only caveat to this is if you are trying to get Will Ospreay over as a top five or six wrestler in the world over the last years, as Jim Ross framed it, and a potential, you know, we'll see how the politics and contracts and date availability goes and all that. But somebody you potentially might do something with at a top level, do you want it to take 14 minutes for Ospreay to beat a tag team wrestler who isn't the type of tag team wrestler like Danielson and Moxley, who you imagine breaking off and becoming a world champion single star, with all due respect, and there's a lot of it, to Dax. That's just not, I think, how he's perceived or pushed. And that's the only caveat to this is, do you pay a price to have a great match that can work against, well, Ospreay is just great. Like, I bet Miro and Ethan Page could have had a better match. I'm not saying either of them, with all due respect to both, are at the level of Ospreay or Dax. They could have had a longer, better match, but the story that matches, Miro is decisively better than Ethan. Now, granted, they went like 9 minutes. You could argue that should have been shorter too. But that's how AEW works. Like, I remember, you know, 2 years ago, we were saying that about Cody matches. Why is Cody going so long with somebody who's a level or two below him in the depth chart? So it is kind of how AEW works. And so as long as they're consistent in that way, it's good. It's the only caveat I can come up with. And it's not even one I believe that much in this case, because Dax is a multi-time, multi-continent tag team champion, and that match was so good. You know, I think it was far and away a net positive.
Yeah, and, you know, within the AEW landscape, you know, he had a match like that against CM Punk, I don't know, was it 2 or 3 months ago before Punk won the title? So, obviously, CM Punk is the top tier. He's the world champion. So, I think within that context, it works, and Dax took him to the limit, and then they kind of teamed up, obviously, as Punk got injured. So, yeah, I think it works if you don't do it all the time. You know, if this is, I don't know, Max Caster, or if it's Matt Sydal, something like that. Then
yeah,
that's a little much, I would say. But, yeah, I think you do it as a one-off. And you know, if you're aware of how AEW's booking and you know how much they value Dax, it's, you know, it's kind of like with Moxley against Yuta and I'm blanking on who he just went up against, but basically put guys over while beating them. It's kind of the opposite for Harwood. Like, you know, he loses most of these matches, kind of like the Eddie Kingston route, where he's probably never going to get on that super, super top tier, but even in defeat, he becomes even more of a fan favorite. So I think it works for a handful of guys on the roster to do that.
And by the way, I hopefully we'll remember to say more about Dante Martin later, but I want to just suggest Will Ospreay against Dante Martin, please. Coming to a Rampage near you. We got to get Dante and Mox first on Friday, and that's great. But yeah, I would like to see that.
Yeah.
All right, let's pause, introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers, encourage people to email and call us, and then get on to a lot of other things from this show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. I am Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, the first draft of pro wrestling history, the last 30-plus years, you can access over 1,700 back issues dating back to the late 1980s. When you become a VIP member, full details on VIP membership and all the benefits, including ad-free versions of this show, and I'm going to be Excalibur here, tons of VIP exclusives, Apple Podcasts, app compatible, and an ad-free website to go with it, and blah, blah, blah. All right. Go to pwtorch.com/govip. For full details, you can subscribe through Patreon, through your Apple account on your iPhone directly within the Apple Podcast app, or get the fullest array of benefits by signing up with credit card, debit card, or PayPal through our website sign-up form. But whatever ecosystem you want, it's there for you, and it is easier and frictionless, as they say, to become a VIP member. In fact, when you go VIP, you get a link. If you sign up through our website, you get a link, and it, you just click it, and it'll open up Apple Podcasts, and there's no advanced settings, no password to enter. Boom. It's just, it's there for as long as you're an active subscriber. So it really is easy. In 90 seconds, you can be a VIP member, and we will immerse you with top shelf wrestling coverage. All right. The other voice you hear so far is Tyler Sage. He is a PWTorch.com contributor. He covers AW Dynamite with his reports alongside mine on the website, PWTorch.com, every Wednesday night. He also is the face, one of the faces of the PW Torch YouTube channel. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host here.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here. And yeah, thanks. One of the faces. It's weird to hear that. But yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, I mean, literally, you know, you're
true, literally,
there.
Yeah.
You are. There you are. You can't go to PWTorch.com and not see you or Zach popping up in the corner. Hey, here's a news update. So it's cool. People search, by the way, search PW Torch on YouTube. All you YouTube users, and that's like 80% of you now. And subscribe and check out our content. We'll have Tyler talk more about that in a little bit. Tyler also hosts the Rampage post show that usually goes up late Friday nights on occasion over the weekend. Tyler, good to have you here. We'll talk more about all you're doing in a bit. Let's give out the phone numbers and email addresses because we got lots of people lined up on the phone lines. I haven't even looked at the email box. Okay, thank good. The emails aren't quite as stacked up as our callers are right now. But that's not to discourage anyone. Give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. You can also just call that phone number and listen in if it's easier for you and decide if you want to push 1 as the show progresses. The other way to participate in the show is by email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. So let's get rolling with phone calls because we've got a lot of people on hold. And Tyler, you and I could talk for 20 more minutes before even realizing it's been 20 minutes. So we'll let the callers lead the way here for a little while. Let's begin with area code. Everything just scrambled compared to what I was expecting. We'll go to Chris in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. Oh my God, I did it again. Hey, Chris, how you doing? How you doing, Chris?
Good, Wade. Hi, Tana. How you doing tonight? You did get it right eventually, Wade. I'll forgive you for this one. It's all good. It's been a little minute, so
I know.
Let's talk first of all about that incredible, probably the best match I've seen on free TV in years with Ospreay and Dax. You touched on it, but I think, barring the Rampage match, which I haven't even seen yet, I think that was the way you needed to put Will Ospreay over as one of the highlights of Forbidden Door. Unfortunately, we have him against Orange Cassidy. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, Rey Fénix is right there, although I understand there might be some issues with AAA and CMLL, and that might not be a thing. Do you think Orange Cassidy was the plan all along, or could this have been where MJF was going to slot in?
Interesting. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tony loves Orange Cassidy a lot, so I don't put anything past him to have Orange Cassidy in a pretty high spot. You know, we'll see what happens with the world title and that scene, if it's what's going to shake out between all of those. You know, if we have Adam Page and if Adam Cole's healthy, and neither of them are wrestling against a top guy like that, I think that's a mistake. But you know, also Bryan Danielson, if he's healthy, where's he slotted? That would make more sense in a match like this to me, or I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. called him out too, so we'll see what happens there. But not ideal, but I think for Tony Khan, that's like, it's probably
a 1B choice to go with Orange Cassidy if he's healthy. So I don't really particularly like that either, but I think he's pretty high up on the list for Tony. And to give Ospreay a big win on a pay-per-view, Cassidy's a pretty good guy to give that win to. So it's probably either him or Eddie Kingston was going to be the choice there, if I had to guess.
And all I have to say is don't buy tickets so quickly next time, people. Just, like, take your time, wait for the lineup, and then you might get a more loaded show. But when you sell out as quickly as it did, Tony's like, all right, I like Orange Cassidy. He's a good worker. He's always risen to the occasion. He did it against Kenny Omega. And he doesn't, you know, so this is kind of fun. It'll be a great match. And the show's going to be loaded otherwise. So, so yeah, I mean, I'm being facetious, but I'm sort of making a point also, which is why give away the dream show right away in every way? You know, it's just like safes. I mean, we want to see more of these shows, and you don't want the next one to be a huge drop-off. And maybe I'm just more of a fan of Orange Cassidy than average, maybe, but I'm not all that bummed out about it, in part because, I mean, save the big matches for when they can have that spotlight and be the focus of the hype. And instead of just giving the absolute best series of dream matches, almost like it's a one-off show right away.
I can agree with that, but we haven't got any of the dream matches. I mean,
well,
Zack Sabre Jr. Yeah. and Danielson is one of them, and that might still happen. But like,
right.
Yano is right there for Cassidy. That would be a dream match. You could have Pac and Ospreay. I would love to see that. But
yeah.
So far, like, if you were to sit me down 3 months ago and say this is happening, I don't think Cassidy and Ospreay would have been anywhere on the list, nor would any of the matches that we have lined up right now. Maybe if we do get Okada, well, Okada's not coming, and which made me glad I didn't buy a ticket to Chicago because he was the main reason I wanted to go. You touched on Tony, and we're going to get to him now. This is a deep cut. There's a line from the James Bond movie Diamonds Are Forever talking about one of the main antagonists playing Monopoly with real buildings. And Tony Khan is playing EWR with real wrestlers. He is literally booking his shows for one person, and it's him. And it's kind of exactly the same as what Vince does with WWE. And case in point is Jay White. Why should I care more about Jay White than Will Ospreay on the strength of tonight? I know New Japan. I know why I should. But the average viewer, that mythical second million, Wade, that you say exists, and I'm still not convinced.
There are more than
New
1 million people on the planet.
Really?
There are actually at least 2 million. Unless Wikipedia is wrong.
and
unless SmackDown
ratings
are a lot.
But you've got – so Will Ospreay comes out with a belt, and we hear that he has a second belt. He's just not carrying it right now. Jay White comes out with a belt. At some point in the night, Excalibur breathlessly explains why NJPW has IWGP champions, which I completely ignore because I have no idea what he's talking about. So now I have two people with belts. I've seen Will Ospreay have one of the best matches I've ever seen on TV, and I've seen Jay White beat two tag team wrestlers, not even on Dynamite. Who am I caring about more?
Tyler, what do you
no
think
reason.
About that juxtaposition? Or not, that choice and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's I think, been a positive for Will Ospreay within AEW is because he is, yeah, you can compare him side by side with Jay White, obviously within New Japan, and then just their talent and their age and their, you know, cross ability here in North America. And, you know, he's been treated like a star, unlike Jay White when he first came over. You know, when he was doing stuff with Impact and did a couple dates on Rampage, et cetera. And yeah, that's Tony, I think, having more faith in Ospreay as a performer in the ring than with Jay White. Maybe, I don't know what's there, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty comparable. And I'm just relieved that Ospreay got a win tonight against someone on the AEW roster. And he's been presented in a way to make him feel like a big star, which is where he needs to be. So I think it's a positive out of the negative that was Jay White thus far. Within AEW's landscape, nothing against Jay White, but
yeah, it's weird trying to introduce. I don't know if weird the word, but a challenge to introduce sort of them both to the audience at once. And I can imagine, you know, the people who Excalibur was speaking to when explaining, you know, IWGP is a lot of acronyms. It's the governing body of New Japan. the people who I've been saying they need to speak to more often on Dynamite are kind of wondering, well, wait, Ospreay's this, but Jay White's that, and who's the bigger deal? And it's a lot to take. It's a lot to take in, although you got a lot more of Jay White's personality and a lot more of what Ospreay can do in the ring. But, you know, ideally you'd be introducing them both separately.
I feel like the booking that Tony is doing, just, it's not being done for anybody but him. He's not booking to attract people. He's not booking to please anyone. He's trying to sell to himself and to the people who are going to watch anyway. And I've heard you on this for a while, and I couldn't agree with you more. He doesn't seem to have a grasp of how to expand his audience. And if you have the world champion of your sister company, if you like, I mean, it's not that sort of a relationship, but it's as close as it's going to get. And you're going to bring him out and have him talk, not really cut any sort of a promo except for to just throw out his catchphrases. And like, we don't even know who he's going to fight. I'm interested to hear your opinions on that one, because I don't really know who else is there. Like, Garby Allen, maybe? But he's done nothing. And I think Ospreay is a more talented person. I think Ospreay is probably top three in the world right now. But he isn't the champion. Jay White is. And presumably, Jay White's going to be second from the top on this card, whoever he's wrestling. So regardless of what you personally, Tony Khan, think of these two wrestlers, if you're promoting a show with your co-main event, then you need to make that guy look bigger, and you're not doing it. This isn't EWR, buddy. Like, give us what the fans want, not what you want.
Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the motivations there, and for Tony Khan, and I do tend to agree that he's booking for himself, especially something like this. I think a lot of AEW main storylines have taken a back seat and have had, you know, this New Japan stuff thrown in there, and it's definitely been an odd couple of weeks for AEW in general, which is what you're going to get with a crossover show like this anyway, so that's kind of built in. But I think it's just obvious that Tony Khan has people that he relies on or enjoys more in the ring than other people, and that is, you know, part of being a booker and having, you know, one single control on the promotion. I think if any of the three of us were in Tony Khan's position, we probably would switch a couple people around, but I think that's anyone's position. So it's kind of that age-old question of wrestling, right? Do you want a sole person in charge, or do you want a committee or a group of people? And I think there's pros and cons to both. So I'm not as bugged by it personally, because I know, like, as soon as we get to the Dynamite after Forbidden Door, none of this matters. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it, and this is kind of like a exhibition season for AEW for the most part. So that's kind of my personal mindset on it.
Chris, back to you. Tony Khan, I think, has gotten pretty far, admittedly, booking for himself. You know, your analogy at the beginning of that was apt. But anyone listens to me a lot knows I'm an advocate for expanding beyond booking for yourself, or booking for an audience that is that first million, the people who are popping in the arena for these things and going, what do we do to expand this? And I think there's a lot you can do without turning anyone away. You know, we saw video packages now show up during ring introductions with a little, you know, visual and then Excalibur, verbal recap of what the backstory is of feuds, because even people who watch all the shows need a little reminder, especially when something goes back a few months and you're revisiting after it hasn't been the centerpiece of every show that you've watched. And that's good. It was a happy medium. You know, it's not a long video package where the fans are sitting in the arena bored and there's less action on a show. They found a way to make it work. I think there is a way to cater to fans who would like an explanation. What is IWGP? What is new? You know, why are there all these titles? What is Rev Pro? You can fit that in, and I'm not saying they get an A or A+ for how they did it tonight, because I think there's still too much speed talking going on. Siobhan even made fun of that a little bit at one point with the All-Atlantic title summary from Excalibur. There's still just, you know, too much going on. I think a lot of that is Forbidden Door hype and the fact that this is sort of a sandbox of fun toys for Tony and in the fan base that this show is unabashedly, admittedly catering to. But when we get past Forbidden Door, I'd like to see fewer wrestlers talked about and present on Dynamite on average going forward. I think it's still, you know, too much. Even if they do a good job recapping it, you're introducing a lot of characters, a lot of backstories, Ospreay, Jay White, Tanahashi. It's just like, and that's, those are like the top tier ones, but then you got the Jericho six man, and even he seems like, okay, I got to remember everything here as he's, you know, repeating it. So there's a lot going on right now. And, you know, next month it'll shift and away from the need to introduce newer characters. And I hope there's a little more focus. So now I will throw to you, Chris, for real.
Okay. So I'll just finish off on a couple quick points. That Wardlow segment sure did happen. And that's all we need to say about that. Everybody needs to go and buy an electric car like tomorrow. These things are incredible. I've never heard anyone drive one and not love them. And I'm really interested to hear who you think we're going to see for Jay White and Adam Cole and Adam Page, for those three. Who are they going to fight at Forbidden Door? So I will leave you on those. Thank you very much for taking my call as always.
Chris, give me the three names again.
Jay White, Adam Page, Adam Cole.
Got it. Cole, Hangman. We have to say Hangman or else I get all confused. Jay White. Cool. I'm looking at the roster and I'm trying to piece this together. Thanks, Chris. Sorry. Yeah, appreciate it. Okay. Tyler, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. I mean, do we know if Cole is healthy for a match? I know that's kind of been an issue the last pay-per-view. So I'm hesitant to project him even in a match if I don't know if he's fully healthy. I don't know. I don't have a good feeling because this is – I mean, we'll talk – I'm sure someone will bring it up, but that segment, especially from the Hangman Page position was a strange call, I would say, to frame his character. So we can get into that later. But I don't know if it's not one of them. I don't know if I doubt it'd be a four way match, but I don't have a good feel about it. And we are 1 week of television away from the pay per view. So I would say I don't have a good feeling either way. But I would assume that either it's the three of them in a match, or it is White and Age somehow, or maybe one of those three aren't even on the show is kind of where I'm leading to filibuster for you to get an answer there, Wade. That's my guess.
I don't have one right now. But I welcome emailers and callers to make some suggestions. I mean, some of it just, it is like, okay, is Cole healthy? Is Danielson going to be healthy? If he is, then is he going to wrestle? We think he's going to wrestle. Is there somebody else from New Japan who we're not considering? Is there somebody who gets eliminated in the All Atlantic tournament who then is a nice choice, but they don't want to announce it yet because they don't want to give away that they're not involved. I don't know. I'm scrolling through. So I know we got Javier on hold and I'm actually curious what he thinks, but he's going to have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on. Cause we got, lots of people on hold, and I don't want anyone to drop off because we're taking too long. We'll go to Dave from Holyoke, Mass. Up next, haven't heard from you in a while. Dave, good to hear from you. What you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, good.
So this was one of the first Dynamites I'd watched in a while, and I was drawn in by the hair versus hair match. I either read about it online or I heard about it somewhere. So I was like, you know, I'll check out tonight's episode and I'll see what else Dynamite has to offer. I thought it was a good show overall. You know, I was here and there a little bit with it. It turned out that tonight was the 50th year anniversary of Price is Right. So I was doing a little flipping back and forth between Dynamite and Price is Right. But overall, I thought it was a good show. I was definitely entertained by it. A couple, not really questions, just a few comments. You know, the first caller talked about the Ospreay and Cassidy match, and Cassidy was kind of one of the first things that drew me into AEW a little bit, or like right before AEW started, I learned about Orange Cassidy, and I was intrigued. I was watching YouTube videos about him. I really liked him. And then seeing them kind of face to face today, didn't really do that much for me. You know, as much as I kind of like Cassidy, I know the match just doesn't excite me that much.
Yeah, I'm more into it. I'm not saying it's a top five dream match, but I thought this is going to be a really good match. And I've been missing Orange Cassidy a little bit in the AEW mix with so many other people around. So I'm okay with it, but I'm not surprised the feedback we're getting from Tyler, you and the callers as far as that match goes. But I just on a personal level, like I just think we're playing long ball. This isn't like I hope we are. I don't think this is just a one off chance for Ospreay on a AEW New Japan show.
I'll go back to the caller.
I made
my point. No, tell you, you're good. Thank you.
Main event wise, I thought the main event was good. I enjoyed the ladder match. That's another reason why I checked out the show. I did kind of at the very end of it. I saw Christian check on Luchasaurus, and like I said, I don't watch Dynamite a ton or AEW a ton, and to me, I was like, oh man, like I can't believe that Christian is still kind of with these guys. Because every time I do see AEW and Jurassic Express comes out, he's with them and he either kind of comes out and then goes to the back or just kind of is out there managing and sort of cheering. And it's not so much that it seems like a waste of him, maybe a waste of him, but it just seems weird that every time I see him, he's not really doing anything. So I was kind of surprised/happy to see him do the turn on Jungle Boy tonight, just because it, to me, and maybe for other people especially that watch the show more, it just seemed like I was ready for him to do something else than just come out and be the manager.
Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I watch the show every week, and I was certainly surprised every time he came out was still with them. It was long overdue. They built this up for a long time, so I agree with you. And, I think if Christian can work on a regular basis, he's much more valuable in the ring being a heel against an up-and-comer like Jungle Boy to tell a fairly long story there with him. And what does Luchasaurus do? All that stuff is much more compelling than them kind of being – good in the ring, but relatively bland babyface champions that, I don't want to say bring down the tag team division, but it's kind of like the Hangman Page being champion storyline. Like if there's no, thought or juice put into those stories, it kind of feels flat. So I think everybody is better off from a storytelling standpoint in Jurassic Express now after losing the title. So I think it's a win post losing tonight.
Yeah. Lucha's is Jungle Boy a bigger star for having been featured the way that he was featured in a tag team for this long, or did it sidetrack him no matter how good the good parts of his reign in the matches were? Did it sidetrack him? Well, it seemed like other singles wrestlers being brought in from the outside or being special attractions just distracted from what felt like momentum for him before that as a singles wrestler.
Yeah. I think it probably was a good thing on the whole that he was less likely to get lost in the shuffle, even though, he was relatively lost in the shuffle compared to, if you look at day one of AEW versus where we are 3 years later here. But I think it gave him a better chance to stay more relevant than if he was a singles guy who, is not doing a lot of promos on the mic and is not coming up with his own stories. Obviously, in AEW, to be a top-tier singles guy, you kind of need to bring it with your stories and you need to kind of write for yourself in a pretty strong way. And that'll get you to the top. Like a lot of performers have that are not legacy, WWE guys or wherever else you're looking for. So I think it was good to keep him somewhat relevant, but now it's kind of time for him to, become a bit, if he's going to become a big star or if he's just going to become a good guy, a good hand for the company. I think we're going to find out a lot here in the next, 6 to 9 months. About where he is and what he's going to be.
I think he should win the Christian feud. I think it's a good feud to have at this stage. Christian isn't, so big that it makes Jungle Boy look small, but I think people perceive Christian as being a little bigger than he is. And not that size is a huge deal, but for Jungle Boy, as thin as he is and being so small compared to Luchasaurus, I think Christian is just a good matchup that way. Same thing with Will Ospreay and Dax in that way. Just it feels like a a good size matchup where the story is just the battle between two people without that being a sidebar story, which, you know, is the case with some size discrepancies elsewhere, and you have to kind of turn it into a story. And Christian has been a heel before. He is an experienced veteran, and I think Jungle Boy winning that feud can elevate Jungle Boy. It's not like, oh, he beat Christian, now he's a world title contender, but I think it can work to get him on track as being on the radar as one of those pillar original, you know, AW originals and pillars again. Dave, back to you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just got one last thing. I was watching the Wardlow segment, and I was just watching. I was like, oh, this thinking in my head, this is not good. It's just seeming cheesy. It's kind of taking away some of the coolness factor he had. And as I'm watching and thinking this in my head, I'm sitting next to my six-year-old. Six-year-old doesn't really watch wrestling with me all that much, isn't really super into it. And so we're watching it, and I wrote down exactly what he said. He goes, Daddy, this guy's awesome. Is he a good guy? Whoa, he just caught that guy. He's the best.
Ah, interesting.
So, you know, I always have a conversation with my friends sometimes when we're talking about WWE and sort of how cheesy some of their stuff is. And I always try to remember in my head, so I'm a teacher, right? So I always try to, when I'm talking to my high schoolers, I always try to remember, okay, what was it like when I was 15 and 16? And so sometimes when I watch wrestling, I try to do the same. You know, okay, like I fell in love with wrestling when I was like 7 or 8. And what, you know, if I think something stupid now, what would 7-year-old me have thought or 8-year-old me have thought?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And AEW doesn't, I don't think, Tyler, they do a lot through the filter that Dave just talked about. Mm-hmm. Is that on brand or off brand for what AEW has built? Or is there a way to do what they did with Wardlow tonight and not really turn people off? It's, you know, it was a long 4 minutes. It you know, the first 2.5 was okay. And then there's like another minute of the same thing. You're like, all right, let's go home. Let's go to the finish. But you know, in the end, it just feels like they got it out of their system. It's done. It was, I think, harmless fun at best, and I don't think the negative is that bad because I feel like they're now pivoting Wardlow to something else.
Yeah. So, like, personally, I despise this segment, so I'm going to try and take myself and put myself in another person's shoes here to answer that. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you have maybe certain characters that are built around that sort of story, like, you know, Luchasaurus, I think, can fit into that boat post Jurassic Express. Like, I assume that, you know, the younger audiences and families enjoy him if he were in a somewhat prominent role, and you can do the same with Wardlow. It's just, you know, if you're trying to expand the audience and you have kind of maybe not a segment every week where you're focusing on, you know, this sort of style, you know, I could live with that. It just felt so abrupt here tonight from what we usually see with AEW. So if there's a conscious effort to kind of expand the portfolio, if you will, of what they offer as a company, I can get down with that. But if this is a one-off and it's not going to kind of be something that is for kids or for people that are just wanting this sort of content, then I think it's kind of a miss if it's going to be a one-off because you're not going to retain anybody in the audience. And then on your point there, Wade, I want to see a match with Scorpio Sky here because we've like not seen a match with Wardlow wrestling a real match in a long time. So I'm like pretty high red alert that I don't know what sort of quality this guy can be. And that's kind of worrisome when I was pretty high on his stock, you know, 3 months ago. So just want to put that out there.
All right. Dave, back to you.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Video premium. Call again. Yeah. I like that perspective too. And that was an interesting anecdote and, you know, mm-hmm. I haven't said this in a while, but like sometimes I tell people, and I hope it doesn't sound too antagonistic, but it's not all about you. You know, you're not an audience of one. And in 2 hours, there might sometimes be 10 minutes that isn't your favorite thing. There might even be a video package where you're like, oh, what am I going to do? Check Twitter. But realize there are more people out there with different tastes. And you know, it doesn't mean you, I don't like the idea of trying to be all things to all people. You know, I think that's a losing formula because now you're, you know, what do they say? A jack of all trades and a master of none is you know, a thing. And you don't want to be that version of a wrestling company. You want to have an identity. You want to lean hard into certain things that you believe in and that your core audience has. But you can pick your spots and stray a little bit to make it, you know, to welcome some other people into the fold. I mean, it is, again, I don't know how palatable it is for AEW to overtly market to families and kids. WWE is doing that. You want to be an alternative, not a pale imitation or you know, a derivative. But AEW, like, there's like, it's like, it's when you look at it, it's like kids aren't even allowed. It's like the old days when they didn't allow anyone under 16 at wrestling shows or whatever the ages were in different states. It's just weird, you know, compared to a WWE experience. Tyler, anything on that?
No, yeah, and I think you're right there. I just, you know, I don't at this point, if you were to ask me, I don't think W or AEW would commit to trying to expand their offerings to, you know, kids and families. So that's my only pushback on, and not even on your guys' point there. I think it's just, and I think they probably should if they want to expand the audience base. I just don't trust at this point AEW to kind of break out of their formula, if you will, of, you know, certain segments, number of matches, types of content, et cetera. I would like to see them, you know, at least try and be a little different and expand, but I just don't see it at this time. So I guess that's my pessimistic take on your good idea there.
Sure. Yep. All right. Let's go to, someone just dropped off. Oh, I see. Someone undid one. That's fine. I'll go to Shayna. The switchboard is bouncing around every time someone hits one or unhits one. It's not a guilt trip. It's just a fact. Let's go to Shane in Detroit. Go ahead, Shane. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. How are you?
Good.
Hey, good.
Good. Well, I was going to call about just one thing, but after hearing the last couple callers, I'll say I was excited to see Orange Cassidy back. I feel like it's been a while since he's been kind of on the show. So I'm just happy to see him back in general. What I was originally thinking about was that Toni Storm package that they did, actually, where they had her, like, doing a live interview, but then they were kind of flashing the story over like they would normally do on a pre-tape. I don't know if I've seen that before, but I thought that was really cool, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I think they did – was like three times tonight where they actually, like, set up the – hey, here's the commercial break and here's a promo, but here's the match coming up. And it might've only been two, but it was definitely a shift tonight in just being a little more flashy from a presentation standpoint. And just kind of keeping a more cohesive story, like through the commercial breaks, if you don't have picture in picture, it was a good way to present, hey, here's what's going on. And I think especially with Tony and Britt Baker, that was important to do because there's a lot of story told there. And then this kind of changed it, and we can talk about that. But yeah, I enjoyed those sort of presentation flourishes tonight, and so I was very positive on that.
Yeah, me too. What else, Shane?
That's basically it. I thought, you know, it was good to see the Christian angle finally happen after it's been speculated for a while, Young Bucks to win, and I thought in general the show was better than it's been the last few weeks. Basically, since MJF gave that promo, I've been kind of down on Dynamite, and I think tonight was pretty good.
Well, let's take a moment and step back, Tyler, because we've talked about a lot of the specifics, and I think some things built in have conveyed this. If you piece it together, but let's just say it: this was a rebound show for AEW after last week. They did not. I sort of wish they would just have never mentioned the All Atlantic title again, just like MJF won't ever be mentioned again, at least until he comes back. I would have been okay with that. It would have just been kind of a funny thing, you know, trivia note 8 years from now. What title was introduced on a show? And then due to backlash and the embarrassment over the wrong ocean being picked and it being the 27th title belt shown on that same program out of someone slept on it, thought better of it, and decided to just pretend it never happened, I would have been okay with that. There's still too many titles, and now we got Rev Pro, and we got Shivani talking about one belt. Osprey's wearing a different one. It was just like, oh god. So I mean, some of that stuff's still there, but this was a blast to watch in a good way. and it felt focused on Forbidden Door, and that's going to have some built-in negatives just in terms of all the people you have to kind of introduce briefly to the audience in rapid-fire fashion to set up a show that's, you know, somewhat interpromotional. But this was a big plus in a number of ways, including Excalibur acknowledging there's people out there who can't recite what IWGP stands for. And talking to those people, finally, like, I feel for 3 years Excalibur's been talking to people exclusively who have voted in the Wrestling Observer Year-End Awards in a qualified way. That's who I feel he's been talking to. And he finally, it was like, yes, there's other people out there. Yay, we're here. You know, like, there's people sitting on their couch who I'd just be going, I feel like Excalibur talked to me for the first time in 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say, like, he's probably talking to people that have, like, have purchased DVDs from PWG. Yeah, like, even more so than Observer voters. So, yeah, I mean, I think people just kind of tuned him out. And, yeah, I think there were some positive notes, as you mentioned there, and a recognition of some things that maybe weren't hitting in a good way. And I think it's good to see a small and medium pivots by a company. And, you know, I mean, no one's perfect and no human, no wrestling company, no anything. So knowing what doesn't work and then pivoting from that is important. And, yeah, so on all that, like I said earlier, for me personally, this is like kind of exhibition preseason mode for wrestling within AEW, and things are going to kind of heat up again within the AEW landscape after the show. So I'm kind of viewing all of these shows as that, as like fun, not terribly important to the overall, you know, lore of AEW, if you will. But yeah, I think some of those important key changes are good to see. So yeah, I would agree that I was more positive on this show than the last 2 weeks, pretty uniformly. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yep. Very good. All right. Shane, I think you said that was all you had. Let me just go back to you just in case. Is there anything else, any final words or anything?
I guess the only other thing I thought of was that I actually expected Jericho to lose that match just because of that bald spot that he had going on at the pay-per-view. But I don't know. I was thinking about what they say Vince would say is, like, if you're going to shave your head, don't do it for free, you know, do it in the match. So I thought that was fun, but that's it. Have a good night.
All right, cool. Thanks, Shane. All right, cool. Let's go to Hinton in London, Ontario next. Hinton, thanks for calling tonight. What's on your mind about Dynamite? Hinton from London, Ontario. Are you there? Hey, Hinton.
Hey,
we just heard you there.
Self-muted my mic. Hey, Tommy, wait, I'm going to cycle through my – just get to my points right away so you can get through callers. I thought – First of all, I'm going to go back to Rampage. This past episode of Rampage was the most boring episode I have ever seen in my life. And, geez, the way they brought Aussie Open in to lose to Trent Beretta, of all people, was so – I mean, I'm not a New Japan fan, but it was so infuriating. It's like, how am I supposed to get excited after this? And I'm glad they rebounded with giving Will Ospreay a major singles win tonight in front of what is essentially double the audience, which they had to do after what I saw on Rampage. So now that he's got the win, he's not wrestling for a championship. He's wrestling Orange Cassidy. They have 1 week left. What's the story going in? Well, what's the grudge between these guys? I'm not quite getting it because I think they're trying to sell it on, oh, it's going to be a good match. And, you know, there's politics involved in Orange Cassidy's somebody we can beat. So get excited to see Will Ospreay wrestle an American. I don't know if that cuts it for me, especially since the state of the IWGP title is in needless flux right now. And Will Ospreay is put across like the biggest star that New Japan has exported to AEW. And there's just nothing in terms of sinking our teeth into his feud going into the pay-per-view tonight. So I guess my question would be, if you picked up on some semblance of story, let me know. Otherwise, what would you hope is the best-case scenario for how they build up Orange Cassidy versus Will Ospreay?
Tyler, do you have anything to add to it? to that?
I mean, not really. I'm less high on it than you are, and not that I'm against Orange Cassidy and Will Ospreay, but like I was a little bit more like, oh, okay. I mean, I was happy to see Cassidy back, but it's kind of him and you know Miro came back what 2 weeks ago now, and not to make this a Miro conversation, but I feel like both of them are kind of in the same zone of like. Their comeback should have felt a little bigger than they did. And now they both feel like they kind of right where they were when they left, as opposed to maybe feeling like a bigger deal for being gone. And I think that's kind of a negative to AEW in general, that that can happen. But yeah, I think it's more what you said, Wade. It'll be a match. It'll be, you know, the fifth most anticipated match on the card, fourth maybe, depending on how things shake out here. So it's kind of being treated as such to get Ospreay a win in hopes that, you know, you can get Ospreay and Kenny Omega this time next year or, you know, whatever. I think the only pivot I would make if Hangman's not going to be going against Jay White, that would be a pretty juicy match and you could still have Hangman lose because he just lost the title and tell that story within AEW. So I think there's, you know, we'll see what happens there before I give final judgment. But yeah, I think it'll be a fun match and it's just being treated like, hey, let's give, we're going to give Ospreay the big singles win. And, you know, that's the guy's going to go against. So that's kind of the trade-off of having an interpromotional pay-per-view. But yeah, that, I mean, there's no story that there's no way to defend it, I think. So on that front.
Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't get any slow-mo stuff. I mean, this is, I think maybe, you know, Orange stepping up to try to do something on a more serious level against a more serious opponent. And he's, you know, like, I mean, I think he's really stepped up and been good when called on. So, you know, it's just, I think the match quality will be good. And if Orange Cassidy's going to be around for a while on a weekly basis and Ospreay isn't, then, you know, this can elevate not a pillar, but, you know, that next layer of AEW originals that I think have a connection with fans.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's just not really doing quite that much for me, and I'm sure there's probably one or two other people that'll say that, and then Javier's going to come in and say Google this, Google that. So that's how this goes, right? My guess of the story is, oh well, you see, Ospreay was in a feud with Trent Barretta. Trent Barretta used to be a big deal in New Japan with his partner Rocky Romero, and since you know. He beat them up, and now Orange Cassidy wants to come beat him up, and it's this whole thing. And I'm like, I just cannot care for it. I'm sorry. My next point, though, I mean, speaking of not caring for it, what do you make of this wild idea? MJF showing up at Forbidden Door as a ticket-paying member of the audience and sort of being like one of those cynical New Japan guys, probably like me, just kind of sitting there going, I don't watch this shit. I'm not going to pretend that I'm a fan of it, but I'm just here to give my, you know, kind of laughy expressions on these guys, you know, dropping themselves on their heads and trying to please a slice of a fan base. Based on what you know about the situation backstage so far, what direction it's tilting, do you think that that's something they might do?
I don't, because I think it'd be a gigantic distraction from a really special night. And the last thing you want is, you know, pick your match on that lineup, especially involving a New Japan wrestler, and all of a sudden there's an MJF chant in the crowd or, you know, a big distraction. I think it'd be disrespectful to what Forbidden Door can be. Now, can you do something, you know, that sort of in between but not during, perhaps, but again, now that starts to become the story of the show. More than what's happening, what just happened and what's happening next. I think the time for the MJF payoff is, and I think there will be one, but I don't know. I think there will be one. You know, I've given people in that company the opportunity to outright say, you know, he's dead to us and we're done with him. And I haven't gotten that. So I think there'll be that moment. But I think it should be quite a bit later. And under a circumstance where it is the story, you know, one of the issues with AEW is there's just so many things going on. It takes away from other things. I mean, I want to be talking about Tony Storm. I want to talk about what this means for the Young Bucks. I want to talk about Miro's return. Like there was a hair match that, you know, it's been brought up, but I haven't talked about. Like there's a lot, and I don't think Forbidden Door should add something to it. That's my take, and I think MJF, if he returns, it doesn't need to be on that show to work, and so I think you can drop that almost anywhere and let it be the centerpiece, and it'll work. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I think I don't think it's a bad idea if he was, you know, if he wasn't working this, if he is working it in the way that he is, it would just kind of blow that whole facade away and make that the promo that he had definitely feel pretty meaningless. So I think if you were to do that angle, you'd want to do it in some way that it's like MJF joining a live stream on, you know, maybe a very popular wrestling site's YouTube page as the show's going on, something like that. You know, no plugs there for our stuff. But, you know, if you were to join a live stream like that and talk crap about people in the ring and make it feel a little bit more legitimate, I think that's the way to go. But, yeah, I agree. I think this is not the show for him to come back, and he's not involved with anybody here, and it would just feel, you know, not true to that character, and he's got to go against, you know, CM Punk or something like that if he's going to come back. So, but I think if you wanted to work it in a legit shoot way, I think that's interesting, but not him coming out and not him, like, you know, coming on commentary and talking. I think that would kind of, that'd be kind of the way to be like, okay, well, that was all fake and that was kind of a waste of time. So I think I would do it just a slightly different way.
All right, Hinton, what do you think? What do you think to that, what we said?
Yeah, that was just a stray thought that I threw out there. We'll see on the MJF. I don't want to speculate too much. I do. You mentioned the hair versus hair match. I want to talk about that. I think Ortiz on Rampage cut a really good promo to hype the matchup. I mean, as good as you can for a hair versus hair match in the middle of a pretty intense, bloody feud. And he went straight to, you know, I want to take away Jericho's vanity. And I thought, all right, that makes sense. And I thought they had a good, really entertaining match. I thought Jim Ross, by the way, Jim Ross he's been good. He hasn't been the Jim Ross of old, but he's been good ever since he's come back. And during this match, he just seemed to enjoy it quite a bit. I think Jim Ross kind of added to this match. I thought the performances from both wrestlers was good. And especially at the end with Ortiz cutting his own hair, I think that was a nice touch. I would have just had him chant Blood and Guts with a little more of a, maybe like a guttural seriousness almost, instead of, I think he was just trying to scream it a little, which I think came off a little too desperate. But other than that, I thought that was a really, really nice touch that Ortiz did, you know, cutting his own hair off. And that was as good of a way as you can transition from what would be a comedy match to a more serious match. Guys, what'd you guys make of all this?
I'm nodding along as you talk. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very good. I mean, not to steal Jericho's gimmick, but I thought it was a very good sports entertainment match. And I don't say that facetiously. I enjoyed it. I think that's a nice balance on the show. And I think, yeah, it was kind of, you know, like a Cody match would be, where you have a lot of interference and there's a lot of things happening. But, you know, the reuniting of Sammy under the mask and all that stuff, I thought was a nice touch. And it was the perfect amount of, you know, interference and relative wrestling goofiness for a match like this. And I thought it all worked pretty well. And I thought Ortiz was going to lose, but yeah, him doing his own haircutting was reminiscent of, if Javier's still on the phone, he can tell me the exact Wrestle Kingdom probably, but Minoru Suzuki lost the hair match. I think it was Wrestle Kingdom 9 and cut his own hair because he's Minoru Suzuki and no one's going to cut his hair. So always a nice touch to be a badass and cut your own hair. And he even hard waved himself with the blade. So that's a nice touch too, to be bleeding all over the places you're cutting your hair. I enjoyed it. Good opener. Good from a show building standpoint, very positive on the hair match to start the show and a ladder match to close it. I mean, that's pretty awesome. To book a show around those two temples, I think is very smart. So yeah, I was a big fan of it.
Cool. Hit what else, Roy?
The Sammy Guevara reunion with Jericho. I think it's a good move in general because Sammy, I think even alone as a heel with Tay Conti, is kind of floundering. Is it a indictment on Sammy Guevara's ability to carry singles programs as this kind of heel that they reunited him with Jericho tonight?
This is another one of those things, Tyler, where it should be like a top three story on the show and a big deal with a history with them. But I'm for it. I mean, Sammy Guevara as a heel is 100 times more interesting than as a babyface. It's a better fit. And I think you multiply that times 10 in terms of the bravado and the spring in his step and the confidence that he has when he's not the only heel and he's playing off of Jericho. I wish that when I saw Sammy and Conti together, Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti standing together on TV, that I was like, ooh, that is a main event act, those two. But it just feels like a level below it. I don't think Sammy on the mic is good enough. I don't think his presence is where I hoped it would be once he broke away. You know, certainly as a babyface, he's a huge disappointment. Although there were early hints of that when he tested it on Dark, and it was awful, awfully boring, I'll just say. And all his charisma just drained out of him. By the way, Dante Martin had this injection of confidence on his promo tonight, and that is a talking point worthy of at least mentioning. So to me, I just think it's great for Sammy, and maybe he'll grow into being a standalone heel act, or you know, him and Conti together at some point. But I think getting him back with Jericho can kind of refuel him. You know, it's like, you know, in a video game, you know, grabbing those gold coins, you know, like Crash Bandicoot used to do. Yeah, I'm old. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think this version of Sammy and just that type of heel as like the smarmy guy with a hot girlfriend, right? That whole thing is not main event. It is, you know, I think first henchman. It's the number two in a group, and I think he can be that all day here. He's, you know, taking place. He's definitely above Hager and Garcia and 2.0 in that group without question, and that's a good spot for him to be in. And you know, he's, and this is not, again, not to be negative, I think he's, this act, the peak you can be is The Miz and Maurice, right? And that never felt main event. It felt like a segment filler, and that's what you need in WWE. But you know, if Miz had someone in WWE that was a legitimate top star and he was the second to them, I think that character would work a lot better, more consistently. And I think Sammy's in that boat right now, and he's got potential to grow as a heel and become his own main eventer. But I think it's either this for him or kind of be relegated to be bouncing around and not having good stories being told. So if I were him, I would be very pro this, and I'm also very pro this as a viewer. So yeah, I think it's a good call all the way around. And yeah, he looks nothing like Fuego del Sol, though, in body type. So I thought that was very comical when the announcers hard sold that, at least for me personally. I was like, Fuego put on about 20 pounds of muscle. So that was very funny. So.
All right. Hitting back to you.
Yeah, I just find it a little – when I saw them unite, I didn't think Miz Maurice. I thought Edge Lita. And Edge – in 2006, I think carried himself well enough and broke, you know, he knew the right tone to strike in that character of, you know, being this young kind of attractive guy with Lita and also carrying singles rivalries as a main event heel. I mean, it was just unfortunate that they didn't get to main event that WrestleMania, but man, he did some good work with Mick Foley that year. And I just don't envision Sammy Guevara being able to break out of his self-indulgence, if you will, and in being able to use this to actually give himself heat. And it's disappointing, especially because he's had like 2 years under Jericho to hone the skill, and he still hasn't quite got it, I think. I suppose I shouldn't over litigate that case now. I'll clear the way for some other callers. Thank you guys for taking my call today.
All right, cool. Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. Let's see. We'll go to Charlie in Chicago up next. Charlie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite? Oh, Charlie just dropped off. That's too bad. All right. So I'll regroup here, and we'll go to Valentino in Miami, I believe. Valentino, is this you? Two people. Okay. I looked away from the switchboard, and two people undid the one, or one hung up and the other undid it. So now I put someone on who didn't even push one. There we are. Now I'm back. All right. Mark for edit, whoever gets this. All right, now we'll go to Valentino from Miami. How are you doing, Valentino?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What do you think about Dynamite tonight?
Absolutely. Well, you hit the nail on the head. It was definitely a rebound show from last week, and I think that they did okay. I think they did way better than last week, right? I also think that they presented Will Ospreay a lot better. I mean, I don't follow New Japan that closely, never have, but I know who he is, right? He's still like definitely a name that you're familiar with if you're, you know, into, you know, professional wrestling like we are. And I definitely thought that how they presented him on Rampage was a little bit just weird. I mean, I know he was on Dynamite the week prior, but just taking his team lost on Rampage, so I thought that was just a bad way to present him to the AEW galaxy, if you will. But this week it was a lot better.
Yeah. Tyler, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I agree completely. And, this needed to happen. And, yeah, I mean, the thing on Rampage is what it is, and it's got half the viewership. And so I think this is even more proof that what happens on Rampage matters, but it's not quite Dynamite. So you can do sort of that multi-man stuff, and it's there, but it's for the records. It's not really a driver of who's in what spot, et cetera. So, yeah.
Yeah. What else, Valentino?
I think the takeaway there is I feel like they listened to like the notes that people were kind of like leaving for them in terms of just like presentation and just how bad Dynamite was last week. And I feel like they definitely put on a cleaner show this week, especially like mentioned the, you know, hair versus hair match to open the show and then the ladder match to close the show. The one thing I was a little bit kind of confused with literally was just when Jericho showed up again and I think he did excellent on the mic. Like, I can't even think of anybody who would have done better. Like, he was, I mean, I guess, Excalibur level of good when it came to a presentation on, you know, everybody who was going to be in the match, but I kind of lost track, and I was just like, wait, who's fighting who? And I also feel like it was kind of like a missed opportunity to have, like, a, you know, AEW originals versus, you know, NJPW kind of like all-stars, kind of like a tag team type of match. Like, I just thought that this match was just kind of like juxtaposed altogether, and I'm not crazy about it, and I don't even know who's on whose team.
I'm not sure Jericho is. Or Shivani or Ross, if we quizzed them right now. But Excalibur can tell you.
Or me.
Always.
If I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Do we think that Jericho was filling in for somebody there? Because, I mean, I did find it, like, very weird that he came out twice in the show in, like, two very unrelated storylines.
I didn't get that feeling. I mean, he had the hair match, which was a ratings, you know, a long-planned match to try to anchor the show for ratings purposes. And then we had setting up Forbidden Door. And his six-man match. And so, and I thought they were far enough apart. And, you know, one was sort of, I don't know, not ending a feud because everybody was out there for that segment later.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, there was too much happening in that second segment with Jericho. Tyler, what do you think? It doesn't feel that odd for Tony to book this way.
No, and what, Blood and Guts, is that like literally the next Wednesday after the show? Or do I have my dates wrong? So that's the 29th, right? Because this is the 26th. So, I think it's keeping that match on the forefront for Jericho in this pay per view because Kingston's part of the other team, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's the whole point of having, you know, top stars within both companies that are kind of at the level of Kingston and Jericho and Suzuki, and things like that to have a match that can then continue on to Wednesday and you can kind of preview that sort of match. So I think it's probably the best of both worlds on paper. If you look at, you know, literally in a booking book to continue that story. So I'll give points there, but I thought Jericho was going to go, you know, hey, you have my spot. I want in on this match. And there would be some sort of story next week to compound that. And I'm glad they didn't go there personally, cause that would just confuse things even more. So, yeah, I mean, it was just heavy lifting to get to the match. And for something like this, you could probably just present that match that it's happening on commentary and do the graphics. I think that would have been better. But yeah, I'm not, you know, in hindsight, I was pretty critical, but in the moment when I was doing the report, but it is what it is. And, you know, I think someone like Jericho wants to make sure his match makes sense to the audience, not just announced. So I think that's kind of the thing behind it, if I had to guess.
Valentino, anything else?
Fair. Thanks for that breakdown, by the way. I'm still not completely sold on the way that they put it together. Like, I still feel like left a little confused, and I still have like a sneaking suspicion that, like, I don't know, there was, I don't know, some like last minute type of shuffling, or maybe not, because I don't think Tony Khan is very known for that. But either way, a pretty decent Dynamite. Definitely will still watch Rampage, even though, you know, it's definitely like the B or C show even. But thanks so much for your time, Wade and Tyler. Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks for calling in. All right. It is now time for Javier. I love when the show is progressing and people are just like, well, what's Javier going to say? Or Javier's probably thinking about this. Or I bet he's taking notes. I bet he can explain it. So I'm glad you were able to call in. Javier, welcome. Javier Machado, the Sports Contributor.
Or today someone sort of taking a shot, maybe. Sorry my voice goes. I have not been. I'm under the weather.
I'm glad you're off calling. I'm glad you're off for a phone call.
But Wade, it's funny because like there are two thoughts I had. I'm like, I'm sure Wade's not going to bring these up, and you did the Dante Martin thing. I was bringing up the Dante Martin thing. That I thought this was his best promo ever, and I did write down. I wonder how many takes that took.
You know what? However many it took, it was more than I would have thought the best take would be.
I've never really been interested in the guy, but this time I'm like, oh wow, you know, he finally got me motivated to watching that. Can't say the same thing for Evan Bourne. So
no, you can't. Oh man, I mean, you know, I'm trying to want to stay positive. I want to stay positive when something isn't, you know, pushed there as like a major thing. Yeah. But yeah.
And the other thing is that you mentioned FOMO, and I was going to actually, that was my main topic, was that AEW is not really friendly for people who suffer from FOMO, the fear of missing out. Because, I mean, there's so much stuff. I mean, something as simple as Jericho, and it shouldn't affect your enjoyment of the product, because Jericho brought up Shota Umino. And, you know, this is a guy, like, for anybody outside, when you see him show up on Forbidden Door, just another wrestler. In reality, he is a low-level, you know, he's just starting off his career. Think of him kind of like Jungle Boy Day 1 AEW, where someone with potential, that kind of, you know, or like a Dante Martin, that'd be another, you know he's like someone on kind of on that level. But if you're following the career, I mean, you know, he was a young lion when Moxley was in the G1. Moxley pretty much kidnapped him to be his personal young boy, to, you know, like I pick, you know, does the stuff for him. And he basically corrupted him. He was, you know, ended up like wearing like, you know, dressing the wrong way. Shota Umino is the son of Red Shoes Uno, who's the head referee for New Japan. And this is like all stuff that, so when Jericho brings him up, if you're in the know, you're like, ooh, he's, you know, he brought him up. But like, you know, if you're not, it shouldn't affect you in any case. But by adding that, if you're in the know, you're like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, I mean, it's if you're someone who's like, oh man, I kind of wish I had that reaction, you're like, you're not going to be happy with a lot of what AEW does, because a lot of it is, and for better or for worse, they draw a lot from outside of the promotion. And usually, in a lot of cases, they don't do a good job of, you know, filling it in.
Yeah, cool, good.
The one thing that, you know, I do think they improved on that today, because during the Ospreay match, they did bring up the fact that, he was the, it's kind of weird that he didn't bring the IWGP U.S. Championship with him, but they did bring up the fact that he's the current IWGP U.S. Champion, and they made sure to mention that Hiroshi Tanahashi held it, so did Moxley, so did Kenny Omega, so it could actually, draw a line so you could, see how important, Ospreay is by tying all those people together. Mentioning that he was the second IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, bringing that up, I did like the touch of them explaining that it's called the IWGP because that's, the kayfabe, governing body of New Japan, which is why it's called that, not the New Japan Pro Wrestling title. So I thought they did a good job in that respect setting up the filling in people like that. You could probably argue that the fact that he, had to say it really quick, because there's so much going on that,
Cool. I never know when you pause if you're hitting mute to cough or not, Javier. I'm sorry.
No, well, anything to say about that stuff?
Just, Tyler, do you have anything to say?
I generally agree. I think tonight was a good example of what Javier is bringing up of like having sort of those broader important points for the casual viewer or, not super hardcore viewer, to get the important stuff. And then there's like the little Easter eggs for the hardcore viewers, like, Javier and myself, that's a nice touch there, to make us, our audience of one, as you put it, Wade, which I think is apt, to make us feel special and important as wrestling fans that we're committing this time. And we had a little wink and a nod. So I think tonight was a good example of how you can do both and a guideline going forward to kind of, you can do it all if you strategically do it. And, not that it's perfect, obviously. Tony calling, Will Ospreay the IWGP champion is not great. But that's also like having rules of like, Will Ospreay should not be walking out there with the Rev Pro title after we had 35 belts on screen last week. So, it was an improvement from last week. But, I think that's more of a general thing that should be considered is, unless it's vital to the story, if it's a non-AEW title, you should really consider talking about it or showing it because it can get confusing. So,
yeah, this is tangent. Like, we talked a lot in last week about top belts for everybody. Yeah. And did Adam Cole wear his own belt? Okay. Maybe that's a concession that was made after the criticism last week. But I don't think you need I know that, I think the argument from Tony Khan and AEW would be we are we have open doors in this company. If there's a champion of the organization, we're gonna acknowledge it, bring the belt with you. You've got ROH, I think ROH is still a thing in AEW, but fortunately, I guess that's taken a backseat to New Japan at the moment. But yeah, that with Impact and always with New Japan so the idea is, people are wrestling fans in 2022. No, there's other groups and there's other belts, but that doesn't mean everyone has to bring their belt from the outside and that it has to be acknowledged. It's not insulting the audience if for a match that a champion from outside that organization who is not defending the title and doesn't plan to defend that title, it doesn't have to bring the belt with him. That's okay. I don't know. I was going to say something else. Oh, and you can watch the NHL Stanley Cup Finals and not know, like, what constitutes offsides, for instance, or if it's not notice if a team is forechecking well. You can enjoy hockey that way, and the announcers can talk to you in a way that you can enjoy it, but there are also, and you don't want to get bogged down with a color commentator adding a ton of super, stuff that just sounds like it's the assistant coach talking to the coach about a strategic shift between periods. You don't want to go too far in that direction, but a commentator can throw some stuff in that isn't meant for everyone watching to understand, but it's something that there's a backstory or a rule or a strategy that was done that takes knowledge of a player's tendencies or background. We see that in pro sports. You can play to the two different audiences, the 80% who aren't going to know some of the references, and but still satisfy the 20% to know that they're being seen and heard, and this isn't just for casuals. And I think that's just a balance AEW still is trying to – I shouldn't even say they're trying. I think it is a balance that I hope AEW is more aware would be beneficial, and once we get past Forbidden Door, becomes more obvious that they're trying to address it. Anyway, Javier, back to you.
Yeah, on the titles, you actually won to get my take last week, but we didn't get around to it because pressed for time. But you know, I when it comes to the belt, and I'm fine if your promotion has a lot of titles as long as they're clearly, you know, delineated. New Japan kind of falls under that. You know, they have three singles titles. U.S. Championship, not some clearly delineated because. Mainly because of COVID issues and stuff like that. But, you know, so they haven't really placed that title where it goes. But, you know, in general, they're you know where each title resides. Or I do like the idea of, you know, having, you know, belts from outside your promotion, like how FTR has the, AAA, I believe, titles, you know, because it shows that, you know, that your wrestlers have conquered other promotions out there. You know, I'm also fine with, you know, temporary titles that belong to, you know, like basically ROH titles where you're absorbing another promotion, as long as it's temporary and you're either planning on, you know, fusing those titles or spinning the program off to their own thing. I'm perfectly fine with any of those. It's just, it'd be nice if you weren't doing all three at once.
Right. Yes. That's just sort of, you can apply that to almost half the things AEW does. It would be, you know, it's good, but it'd be nice if it wasn't one of too many things going on all at once. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing it was asked about why Ospreay and Orange Cassidy. Strange enough, I was just thinking it's probably because Cassidy, Tyler, do you think that Cassidy might be the second most over guy in Chaos?
I mean, that's a loaded question because, anyone's not Okada in Chaos is, could be eligible for that. Yeah. I mean, especially within AEW for sure. I don't know if I'm Japanese, I would say.
Because that was what I was thinking at the time. I was like, wait a minute, you know, because the thing is, I know a lot of people were talking about Rampage and how Trent pinned, I forgot who it was, Trent got the pin in that match, and there was a complaint, you know, why would Ospreay have, you know, be losing this? If you follow New Japan booking, that's almost New Japan booking to a T, because they're setting up a title between Roppongi Vice and Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan, all hail, you know, between the two of them, between those two teams for, I don't know if it's going to be Forbidden Door or not, probably Forbidden Door. So that's why Trent Beretta pinned them, because it looks like in New Japan, for the people who don't know, in New Japan, pretty much all wrestlers are broken up into factions. And what you're seeing here is faction warfare between the Chaos Group, which is generally led by Okada, and in this case, it's represented by Roppongi Vice and the Best Friends people versus the United Empire, which would be Ospreay as their leader and Jeff Cobb, Great O'Khan, Aussie Open. So it looks like faction warfare between those two. I was surprised when Orange Cassidy came out and faced my first thing was like, wow, they're going to do this. And then, like, you know, my brain went to like seeing the matchup between the two and the type of, you know, wrestling the two guys do. And I'm like, wow, this could be a fun match. I was thinking it was going to be like a Rampage or something. I wasn't really expecting for it to be the match for Forbidden Door. But I'm like, okay, well, you know, we're getting that because I thought he would probably end up getting somebody else. But then I started thinking, like, but who else is there? Because it is Chaos versus United Empire. So I was like, who else is there that is higher than, you know, who else could he, you know, be involved outside of Okada if, you know, turns out that Okada is still going to be involved. I don't think he is because I think he's not going to – I believe he's expecting – his wife is expecting, I believe, or just gave birth or some of that. So – or will be – you know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I think that was the – yeah. But, you know, so unless Okada was going to be the other one involved, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'd be like, oh, I guess the only one that actually does make sense at this point is Cassidy. And, you know, Cassidy does have a fan following.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't just scold. I'm glad you didn't just come on to scold me for, you know, being okay with it or defending it or, you know, thinking it's a good thing or, you know, potentially okay. Yeah.
In keeping with the faction warfare, because the other part of faction warfare is Suzuki-Gun teaming up with Jericho Appreciation Society versus the Blackpool Combat Club, which would also probably extend to the rumored Bryan Danielson. Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah.
So, which if that happens, I mean, I'm wondering if they haven't said anything about that just because, you know, the injury, you know, because if that happens, that's probably the match I'm most looking forward to. But that's more factional warfare between those two groups. And then, you know, which brings me to the main, you know, the Jay White thing, because it doesn't seem like Bullet Club is really feuding with anyone. And I was assuming they probably were planning on doing something with LA, with LIJ, with them now signing Rouge. And I thought they were probably going to be, you know, doing like a one-time reunion of the original Los Ingobernables, which was Naito, Rouge, and La Sombra, which is Andrade. I thought that probably was most likely what they were going to do. And then, you know, obviously, you know, politics got in the way of that. So I'm thinking that, so I'm wondering what might end up happening. Cause I mean, the fact that he turned, Jay White turned his back on Adam Cole makes me think that maybe this might be I have a feeling it's going to be a three-way of some shape or form. And I mean, I don't know what his actual real condition is cause you know, nothing's really been said, but I, you know, any, do you think that possibility that it might end up being Kenny Omega coming back and making his triumphant return for that?
Mm-hmm.
That was crossing my mind. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, it just depends. I mean, you know, the Bucks are not part of this show really as of yet. And Kenny's obviously out, but you know, there's a lot of bad blood. I mean, you can probably talk on that too, Javier, like when they exited the company, the Bucks and Kenny left New Japan, they were not super happy with the company. Obviously, Kenny's good friends with Kota Ibushi, and he's not super happy with that company, to say it mildly. So that's my only reservation on that. I mean, it would be an awesome moment, and it feels like that is, if you even tease it slightly, that's worth buying a pay-per-view for a segment of the audience. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the main thing was, oh God, I forgot his name, but the guy who was running New Japan beforehand, before the current one, because now it's Tsunobayashi, but the guy who was running it beforehand, that was the main issue, was with him. So the Forbidden Door opening and stuff, that would have been a no-go if he were still involved. So I think things thawed between the Young Bucks and them after that. So, I mean, I don't think it's still like in the buddy-buddy, but I think, you know, I think that's what really opened the door to that. And I mean, I'm sometimes crazy. So I'm thinking like, if it is a Kenny Omega situation, him winning the IWGP title and Hiroshi Tanahashi winning the AEW title, that would make a story.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, I mean that is, yeah, that's the way to make the pay-per-view memorable, and then you can set up, you know, Punk and Tanahashi for the, you know, the AEW title makes sense, really, on paper. I don't know how much you're going to have Tanahashi on TV and how long Punk's out. That's all varied there, but it certainly would be a gutsy call, and I'm always for gutsy calls, whether they work or not.
I'd be very open to that possibility.
Cool. Javier, I don't want to zap all your strength. Anything else for us before you continue your rest?
The last thing was, you know, one thing that I liked about the show is what one of the things that Tom Martin's been complaining a lot about, and I mostly agree with him, that you actually had some people beating people, you know, and where we were seeing them, like where they stack. You had Tony Storm going over Britt Baker, and you had Miro, which, by the way, it's got to be Miro and Ishii, okay, right? We all agree that that's the match.
I would like that. I would like that.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, it's a four-way. So they're all qualified except for the New Japan guys. And, yeah, so it'll be – yeah, sorry to interrupt there. They'll be in it
four-way?
Together. Yeah, so whoever wins – at least that's what it was last week. It's AEW, could have changed. But whoever wins these qualifying matches, it's a four-way match for the All-Atlantic title. I'm, like, 99.9% sure that that's the way this match goes because they only have a week to book it, right? So, and the only thing not established is the New Japan portion of it. And then, who is it Ray and someone else next week? Or, Ray and Malakai, I think.
Did they announce that?
That was on the top right of the bracket. Yeah. I mean, someone out there is probably like yelling at all of us for not knowing that. But, so if you won the match, then you're in and it's a four-way match for the All Atlantic title is my understanding of the situation. So yes, it's the short answer to my long answer there.
for clarification, this is not the new G1 Climax tournament setup, right?
Oh my God!
We got four blocks, but we're not having a four way at the end, right? Please, Javier.
Let's hope.
I just spazzed out for a second. Remembering that's four blocks now.
I know, four blocks. Yeah.
Oh my God!
But it will not end in a four-way. Is my point. I want to underline that. That is not fingers crossed.
No. That would be a worry. No, they did say that two block leaders would face two block leaders, and then they'll Oh man, it's just. I mean, New Japan keeps doing that because they went to Wrestle Kingdom for 2 days and then. For two nights, and now Wrestle Kingdom's three nights, and now the G1 tournament's four blocks.
You didn't see the news? Javier, it's actually going to be four nights now.
I wouldn't be surprised if by next year I also brought up the women, so if you guys want to talk about that, I will go rest my voice and, like,
okay, cool.
Go to sleep.
Yeah, sounds good. Rest up, take care. But good to hear from you. Javier brought up at the end there the women's situation. Tony Storm getting the win over Britt Baker. Thunder Rosa match announced. What'd you think of that, Tyler? That again, this should have been a top three item on a wrestling show, and it's 11th. On my list, my informal list, but for some people, it's 2, 3, or 4 probably. I mean, this was, I thought, a really good night for Toni Storm on the microphone, her presence, her ring work. I just think tonight cements her, cements too strong a word. It more than pencils her in as like a top four or top six act that I think Tony Khan can just look at her resume and what she's done in AEW so far and go, she's always on my mind in terms of what I'm doing at the women's division. If she's going to be in one of the top three feuds, whether it's for a title or not, at any time, I think he has that in her. And I think it's what disappointed people so much with how WWE dealt with and presented Toni Storm. I think we have a better version of Toni Storm than we did in WWE. I think she's more confident. She looks more athletic. She's just moving around with more confidence, and her face just like exudes like kind of an alpha, I'm here to be a top star vibe. And I didn't see that frankly in WWE in a lot of respects. So I'm less hard on WWE in a way, but But whatever, we're in a good than some others in that respect. But this is, I think, an undeniable version of Toni Storm in terms of you have to feature her and push her. And I don't question at all having Britt Baker put her over.
Yes, and I agree with everything you're saying. I think I could not really put it in a better way. There is some industry news. I don't know if you're on active while we're talking here.
That, No, I'm not. Yeah.
That is related to the women's division, I would say. It's reported, nothing's fact, but with your top-tier women, let's put it that way. Let's stay on subject here. I just saw it, sorry, as you're talking about this.
Oh, well, what is it? Is it reliable enough for it?
It's Raj from WrestleInc was reporting that Sasha Banks was released. He said that at around 11 o'clock tonight.
Oh, okay.
So for everyone listening, it's 11:45. Eastern time, as I say all that. So interesting, as we talk about Toni Storm and top women in that division, that is potentially happening again until I like multiple sources. So that's just here, and I'm excited to tell you, Wade, of the breaking news. That's fun.
Raj gave it from Wrestling. It says, I'm hearing Sasha Banks was released. I don't know if it's her requesting it or if it was on WWE's end. So that's where that story is. But if it's an there have been releases that are not unconditional. The Brock Lesnar one is an example that, was complicated. I don't know, but if she is released and there's a short non-compete or no non-compete, that is a great get for AEW. I want a little message to Tony Khan. We've been giving you a hard time about signing every released wrestler from WWE. Granted, Sasha is, it's not guaranteed she's going to be great to work with. But sometimes it's circumstances that lead to how people, act behind the scenes. So he might, do some due diligence, but from a talent and impact standpoint, there shouldn't be a woman on that AEW roster who says, wait a second, now I'm moving another notch down the roster. Every woman on that roster should be going, I want to work with her. I would bring her in. And I would hope that some of the stuff that you hear about Sasha and why management, there's two sides to everything. And I'm not saying it wasn't 80% management's fault or 92% or 50%. I'm not putting a percent on it. But Sasha wasn't completely innocent when it came to the specific situation and the walkout or some other things going on. So Tony should do his due diligence, and he has more connections in that way probably to do that than he did 3 years ago when he started AEW. So do that. But my God, if you're a woman in AEW, you want Sasha to come in and you want a chance to work with her. I wouldn't be worried about her knocking you down a spot. But we might be getting ahead of ourselves on the story, but I think it's worth spending a minute on.
Yeah, for sure. And we're just talking about Tony being top four. So it was a good segue.
Yeah.
Appreciate your insight there on that. But yeah, on the Toni Storm thing, if we can get back to that, I feel like we're oversharing her every step of the way, unfortunately. But I like, I was of all the things I did not like from Double or Nothing, the pay-per-view, not that it was bad, but I think it was of lower quality than other AEW pay-per-views, was the booking of Britt Baker to win that tournament final. And I think this is kind of like a reboot of the Toni Storm character, and like to reconfirm that, she is in that spot. So I was very much a fan of this tonight and putting her in that spot. And I like I said at the top, I agree with everything you're saying. She feels even more, I liked her more in NXT UK. I thought she showed kind of what she's showing here in AEW more than on the main roster. So I think this is a Toni Storm renaissance a little bit here. And if she can be a top-level performer, that's only positive for AEW in general. So, I thought her in getting the decisive win against the odds here and then setting her up against Thunder Rosa, all positive stuff, because those are, three of your top women all interacting on the same segment, and it didn't feel terribly forced. And, it just felt like a natural process for them. So, very, very positive on all the women's stuff tonight.
All right, very good. Let's go to, there you are, my Twitter feed reacting. All right. who's that guy with the wild hair? All right. I want to go to emails, but, Tyler, so I don't completely forget, this is a good time. Tell people about how they can read more, see more, hear more from you.
Yeah, very good. Doing lots, as you said at the top. Yeah, do the alternative report for AEW Dynamite every Wednesday alongside your report, Wade. So if you want another opinion on that, you can get that there. And then I also do for VIP members, I do the AEW Rampage post show every week. Have not had guests on lately, but we're getting back to guests here soon. So very excited for that. Very enjoyable show to talk kind of all things AEW and focused on, you know, what's on Rampage that night, but more of my thoughts on AEW. So if you like that, definitely a good reason to check that out. And then the PW Torch YouTube page, do daily updates on news alongside Zach Haydorn. And then Zach and I do a weekly show called Fireside Chat that we are talking about the top line subjects in wrestling. Usually do that on Thursday live around 4 p.m. Eastern time. So check that out. If you can watch us live, very much love the engagement, comments, get part of the show just like this. It's a post show without any wrestling on before it. So you can join us there. And if you can't watch it live, please just check us out. And we appreciate all your reviews on YouTube all over the place.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So let's zip through some emails. Easy to say. Then we'll wrap up because we have gone long. This is a show. I mean, I think we could talk about things we haven't talked about yet and get like another hour show. If we just said, okay, anything we talked about off the table, maybe not. I'd have to look. Anyway, let's see how emails do. Kyle from Tinley Park says, I'm honestly a little confused with all this Forbidden Door stuff going on. I felt like AEW is already having a hard time showcasing their existing talent. Now they're just throwing all these New Japan guys at us, which to some viewers are just totally new. The water is just getting muddier and muddier here, in my opinion. I've been a diehard AEW fan since the start, but it was honestly a little frustrating to watch Dynamite tonight. On the other hand, I'm sure some of the AEW talent are not happy about all this. It's just making more and more wrestlers sit on the sidelines. What are your thoughts? Thanks for your coverage of our great sport. I listen every day. I appreciate your work and opinion greatly. Thank you, Kyle, very much. Yes, these people exist. I know some people don't know that. you know what I mean? You know, because they're in a feedback loop or in their, you know, social media circle or fan circle. But I think that's an email that just sums up the people that I think Tony should be ever cognizant of. And same with Excalibur.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm kind of more in that boat than I would think I would be, you know, this time maybe a year ago, in that, you know, I want AEW to be AEW focused and this stuff is nice. It's just I have to put myself mentally in a different spot, as I said a couple times tonight, to know like this is kind of what it's going to be for a couple weeks. But yeah, I mean, I'm someone who watched New Japan before AEW existed and I loved it and I'm a big fan of that company. But there's a certain point where you need to have, like you said with the women when you were talking about Toni Storm, Wade, you need to have a core group of really important people on your show, men and women, that you focus on, and you need to make them, you know, the anchors of your show and go from there, and this is not helping that. So hopefully post this, there's some ROH has its own thing and it's not all over the place and it can be more streamlined. You pick, you know, 3 tag teams, 4 women, 6 men, and you just run with that, and those are who you're you know, aligning AEW behind for the next 6 months. And I think it'd be a much better product as a result for a product that's already good and you can have good matches all around it. But yeah, I think I would say a vast majority of people feel the way this emailer feels as opposed to the alternative, if I had to guess.
And I am, especially with improvements this week, kind of, you know, want to commit to giving AEW some slack until July. You know, I mean, they mm-hmm. have an event, a special off the beaten path event they're promoting, and they don't want to have matches where they're not, like, you know, at least mentioning the wrestlers. I would probably myself go about things differently. But you know, to each their own, and the hype isn't done yet. So we'll see. All right. Mm-hmm. Up next, JB from Detroit says, just to let you guys know, Fight TV kept running after the Christian turn on JB. And this was the interaction between Christian and JB's sister. Oh, is this what you're asking me about, Tyler? This part? That you saw on Twitter?
No, I mean,
or just the turn itself.
Yeah, I literally missed the turn because I thought the show was over, and I came downstairs to set up for the call here, then I was, and I was like, oh, well, good thing I checked Twitter, because, but we didn't even really talk about it. So there you go, the 15th most important thing, it seemed like. So, but yeah, so no, I haven't seen this. If there's any sort of description there, I'd love to hear it.
All right, so well, I won't be able to read it verbatim. This was the interaction between Christian and Jungle Boy's sister, Christian. Your son's going to be eating out of a straw tomorrow. He's a piece of shit. JB's sister, F you, but with all four letters. You're in effing nobody. You don't mean shit. Ultimately, where do you see the tag belts going next? I think we might get the Young Bucks FTR rubber match, which will dominate at All Out. As always, love the show and go VIP. I assume that happened. I haven't seen a clip or reference to it. I trust JB. That's interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing the heel Christian character. And if he seems like he's trying to get himself over or just really working hard to get Jungle Boy over. And I'm looking forward to Christian just actually doing something, like more than just making snide comments, laying the groundwork for a turn for months at a time, and eventually breaking away from Jungle Boy and just, you know, doing something else. I mean, I don't want to like look past what's been built up for a long time and should have a good payoff and should last a little while. But I am interested to see where he ends up, say, you know, after the Jungle Boy feud. As far as the tag team title, God, I haven't thought a lot about, you know, the Bucks winning the belts and what that means for All Out. He mentions FTR in a rubber match. That makes as much sense as anything. They, by the way, did not mention, Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, did they mention the Hardys at all tonight?
They did not.
Yeah, and I think that was the right approach to take, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand, you know, the argument, hey, you advertise it, and that's not happening, but I just don't think you will. I mean, it just real life trumps the, you know, the offense people will feel that something didn't happen that was promised, and they can look it up, but I don't think AEW wants to bring people down by talking about it. So, yeah, anything else comes to mind?
No, I mean, that makes the most sense. It just depends if they're sort of transitional champions. I do wonder what the original booking would have been if nothing would have happened with Jeff this week. That's kind of a curious question. But, yeah, they feel like long-term transitional champions. I mean, you're 8 weeks away from All Out or – you know, somewhere around there. So that makes sense. And having FTR kind of on the run they're on, Dax being the forefront there, but them having, you know, ROH, AAA and AEW tag titles seems to make a lot of sense for me to kind of build them as a generational tag team. So I think that's what Tony Khan wants to do. And I think that's a good story to tell. So that makes sense. If you have a, you know, a couple matches in between, that works too. But I think that's the way to go and to make that a top three match at All Out makes a lot of sense to me.
All right. Up next, we'll read one or two more here. Zach in Texas. I know last week's show drew a lot of ire. I chalk most of it up to scrambling to compensate for the unexpected injury to the champion while trying not to upend all of the plans for Forbidden Door and Blood and Guts. I don't think that's why the All-Atlantic title was created or why people were carrying around the Owen Hart title. I could go on, Zach, but I get the spirit of what you're saying, and there's definitely truth to that. Tonight was a hell of a bounce back. I agree. Everything feels like it's back on track. I won't go that far. The Sammy El Fuego swerve in the opener worked perfectly. I agree. I thought that was really well done. I certainly believed it was El Fuego. I'm glad Wardlow's moving on to the TNT title. Dax and Ospreay put on a GD show. What a match, and what a pop for Orange Cassidy's return. The Mox Tanahashi hype feud was great. Just go ahead and inject Thunder Rosa and Tony Storm into my veins right now, please, and thank you. Stokely Hathaway is just legitimately hilarious. Yeah, he was really good tonight. Now that the Bucks are champs, I see them dropping the belts to FTR at All Out. Okay, vote for that. At that point, FTR could be IWGP tag champs in addition to ROH and AAA. Are there Owen Hart Foundation tournament tag matches?
Stop.
Is there a Rev Pro? Are there ROH tag team titles?
Yeah, well, yeah, there were. Yeah, it's probably the Trios titles will be out then too, so they can team up with CM Punk and take on the Bucks and Kenny Omega for those too. So yeah, just let's keep no more ideas for belts, please. All right. Thank you.
add the AW belts and they'll be dripping in gold, which sounds good to me. So Zach, not making fun of them, but wishing for it. Okay, let's see. We covered that. We'll wrap up here. Josh in DC. I've noticed an interesting AW booking pattern. I feel AW booking is the strongest midway between major pay-per-views. Forbidden Door side, we are past the aftermath of Double or Nothing and too early for hyping All Out. Maybe it's in this middle zone where Tony Khan is paying off his storylines, or maybe it's the sprinkled-in special events like Road Rager. But it feels like we get the strongest booking with good matches and evolving stories when we are far away from major pay-per-views. Any thoughts why, or do you disagree? Tyler, I think that's with WWE, like WrestleMania season. We've talked over the years. It's just like, let's get WrestleMania over so we can get some new feuds. It's just, you know, WWE hype can get redundant and drag on, mm-hmm. and it's just like, oh, please, let's just get to the Raw after Mania. How do you feel AEW, have they established that cadence yet in that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's not always exactly the same. There's usually a major show at least in between pay-per-views that kind of live as a mini pay-per-view, or they do, you know, over a Dynamite and a Rampage to have, you know, a majority of the belts defended within a 2 or 3 week period. So that's the normal cadence there. And yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, I really like the post pay-per-view shows the most on average, because you kind of get that reset and you get to see what the fresh matches are setting up to be, which is always exciting for me as a wrestling fan. But yeah, I mean, there's those, and building for TV seems to, I don't know, I don't want to be too critical here, but it seems like the building for TV matches tend to be a little bit more cohesive. And yeah, they have a little bit longer story being told on average than some of the pay-per-view matches, because Tony obviously likes to drop one or two pay-per-view matches at a time, you know, 6 weeks before pay-per-view. And then you kind of get that last one that doesn't really get a build. And then you get, you know, Darby and Kyle O'Reilly, which is a fun match, but didn't have any build whatsoever. So with TV stuff, usually there's one or two key matches that to get built to. So yeah, I mean, there's a cadence, and I don't know if this is my absolute favorite part. Again, probably the post pay-per-view stuff is my favorite stuff, but yeah, I think some of the TV events, the branded TV shows, are some of the best AEW content in general. So I would agree with the emailer on that.
All right. Well, let's wrap up there. Thank you, Tyler.
Cool.
Yeah.
No problem. Thank you.
Yep. So thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our emailers. And yeah, oh, if you want to be an on-site correspondent, we didn't have one tonight. We'd love to have some a little more often. I've been pushing it very much, and now some people we're not getting as many people mentioning it. So I'll just push it here at the end of the show. Email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. And just put the name of the city and the date if you're attending a Dynamite, Raw, or SmackDown. And we'd love to bring you onto the show to talk about the in-arena experience. All right, we'll wrap up on that note. Thanks again, everybody. And until next time, on behalf of Tyler Sage, this is Wade Keller signing off.